Listen to Shoot the Defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence on the FNX Network, brought to you by My Sportswear and Save Association. I'm your host, Stel, and my guests as ever are Jan and Rodri Giggs. But before I do my hellos to these two guys, I'm going to say a quick hello to my two guests, or our two guests this evening. First of all the way from Manchester, is Phil Melville. Phil, welcome to the show, mate.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, okay. Mate. Thank you for coming on. How you doing?
No, my pleasure.
Thank you very much, mate. And our next guest is another gentleman making his debut on Shoot the Defence. He is a host of Post to Post Footy Podcast. It's Connor Dunford. Welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on, buddy. How's things?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, all good. It should be an action-packed show tonight, as they always are.
Let's hope so.
absolutely right. Well, look, let's begin our show with a bit of bad news, and it's a tribute to a true gent and a pioneer of the game, Cyril Regis MBE, who died at the age of 59. Now, Regis made his name at West Brom with Laurie Cunningham and Brendan Batson, whose journeys played a huge part in the progression made by black footballers. Now, Rod and Phil, you guys, I'm sure you know all about Cyril Regis. What can you say about him to our younger listeners and those who've never got the chance to watch him play?
I think my point, I was fortunate enough to see him play back in the day, back in the early 80s, as an eight-year-old, I do recall. So I think you touched on it. He was certainly a pioneer, certainly for the sort of the leading black players who were coming through at that time, himself, Laurie Cunningham at the time. And for me, he was, you know, the biggest sort of compliment I could probably play him is that if he was playing now, he could certainly hold his own. You know, technically, he was very good. He was very much a sort of modern-day centre-forward. So, you know, it's a sad loss, really. And 59 is no age, really, to lose somebody. So, you know, my thoughts go out to his family and his friends at this time.
Absolutely. And Rod?
Yeah, like Phil touched upon, he was a pioneer in his day. A modern-day centre-forward as it is as today. You know, he was more like a Drogba, a powerful striker. Either foot, can head the ball, could run with the ball. You know, he was a top player, and like Phil says, to die at 59. He was looked like he was a fit, strong bloke as well. So it's a shock to all his friends and family. Like, and yeah, definitely thoughts with them at the minute.
Yeah, it came as a shock, didn't it? Because it's like with Dalian Atkinson, out of the blue, no one was really expecting it. We didn't know his medical records, obviously, so we didn't know if he was ill or not. But again, completely left field.
Yeah. I think by all accounts, I think he's, you read the reports, he looked after himself, he was a fit man. So I think it shocked everybody, really. It certainly shocked me when I heard it, anyway.
That's right. Well, our thoughts go out to his family. It's a very, very tough time, and yeah, we just hope that everyone gets back to normal pretty soon. Right, let's talk about the Premier League, and it was a case of Philippe Hu, as Liverpool ended Man City's unbeaten run and extended theirs to 18 games. Goals from Firmino, Mane and Salah, there you go, in 9 minutes, saw Liverpool go 4-1 up on the league leaders. City scored 2 goals in the final 10 minutes, but it was all in vain. Now, mate, Liverpool actually like a pack of wolves, weren't they? They just didn't give City any time on the ball. It was a typical display, as you said, about Liverpool playing against the big clubs. Now, what impressed you most about their performance?
Their work ethic, their desire, their hunger to win the game. They were first at everything. They kind of played City to their own game, to be fair. And this is what I've said a lot this season. To play City, you have to attack them. If you defend, they're going to beat you eventually. And to be honest, the only team that I thought that could beat City were Liverpool. Because for me, Liverpool, I've said this, they're dynamic up front. The front three can kill you, and they absolutely murdered City. City did not know how to handle, you know, the front three, and their goalkeeper was a bit dodgy, Ederson, and the back four looked very shaky for City. They looked like I don't know. Sometimes when you go to a ground where your track record is not that great, City have not won there for years. So I don't know if that was psychological as well, because they didn't look comfortable at Anfield for me on Sunday. They didn't look like the City that been going unbeaten all season. And maybe Liverpool smelt blood, and the early goal always helps as well with Chamberlain. It was a good strike. And Liverpool were excellent on the day.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it just seemed that Liverpool were up for it, obviously. Mm. And it's almost as if it was the school bully coming against someone that obviously they knew is a bit of a serious entity, and they got one over on them. Mm. City just didn't know how to react to it. Liverpool were pressing high, they were very aggressive. Mm. And Rod, we spoke about ways on how to beat City weeks ago, and we suggested press them high, press them aggressively, and as long as you've got a lot of energy, you're in with a chance. And has Klopp actually got this blueprint down to T now on how to beat City?
Well, possibly, because I remember rightly when they played him at City's ground, the first 20 minutes, they could have been 2 or 3 nil up, mm-hmm. and then City break away and score, then just run away with the game. So, you know, you've got to have the players to do that, and obviously Liverpool have, with the power and pace that they've got and the quality they've got. So he's got the blueprint there, but, you know, you've got to have the quality and the players to do that also. So, you know, and not many teams have got that. So they had a good result, and obviously City weren't at their best. And obviously, like Jan touched upon, it might have been a mental block because they've not won there over 15 years. So did that play a part, possibly?
Fair point. And Connor, to be honest, mate, I didn't intend on asking you this question, actually, because I remember that you're a Southampton fan, and it's all about Oxlade-Chamberlain. Now, I know I've always been a fan of his, and when Liverpool sold Coutinho, I didn't think it was that much of a big deal, because in my honest opinion, I think he's the perfect player for the system Klopp wants. You know, he's strong, he's aggressive, he's quick, he can get a few goals. What's your take on his position at Liverpool? Do you think Klopp will make him a better player than what he was at Arsenal?
Yeah, definitely. I think because the way things are at Arsenal, the way Wenger coaches, I don't think he was the right man to get the best out of Chamberlain, because he's had potential since he was 16, 17 down at our place. We knew he could become something good, just not at the right place at the right time. And you're right, he's definitely got room to improve. I think it's his third goal for Liverpool already, which is his highest scoring season.
Wow.
So, in the league. So, and that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
He's got big shoes to fill with Coutinho. And as I said to you before we started, I've never truly rated Coutinho as high as others have. £142 million, not for me. But Chamberlain is a perfectly good replacement for the price they paid, I guess.
I agree. Now, Phil, I don't think there's any reason for City to hit the alarm bell just yet. You're still comfortable at the top of the table, aren't you? Do you think there's a bit of complacency creeping in, though?
I don't think so, no. I think he's stated in the press, and you've seen in his interviews, that he keeps stating he's not going to allow it. And, you know, you've got to remember, and I think Rod touched on it earlier, you know, they've been there 15 times and not won since 2003, I think, when you go back. So, you know, remember, they've gone 30 games unbeaten in the Premier League up to that point, from last season through to this season. So, you know, I don't see the complacency setting in, not just after one sort of, you know, I wouldn't say call it even a bad result, because I thought Liverpool played really well, and City, you know, weren't allowed. People are saying, oh, they may have had an off day, but I just don't think Liverpool allowed them to settle and try and get a foothold in the game. You know, so, you know, time will tell, but I think at this moment in time, I think it's a bit too early to start saying complacency is setting in, really.
Mm. In that case, how long before City win the league then?
I think, you know, there's a long way to go. There's a long way to go, and, you know, I think when City first won the title, there was an 8-point turnaround at the beginning, and from United and then back to City, and, you know, so there's a long, long way to go, and there's some tough games to play. So at this moment in time, I think they can certainly just keep things on ice for now, as they say.
Absolutely. Well, following Liverpool's 4-3 win against Man City, it gave me a bit of a brainwave, and that's relating to our bite back, which is about goal fests. Now, we asked our friends on Facebook and Twitter what their most enjoyable game containing 7 goals or more was, and this is what we got from them. Now, Mark Meredith is a Birmingham City fan, so I'm sure he knows about 7 goals, conceding more than anything. he said, my favourite one has to be the Liverpool versus Newcastle game, which is the 4-3. But he says, the one game I will never forget for other reasons will be Birmingham versus Swindon. The Blues leading 4-1 at half-time at home. Swindon making a change and bringing on Glenn Hoddle the second half. And the score ended 6-4 to Swindon. Heartbreaking for me as a small boy standing on the cop. Lucius says, the 7-1 win for Man United against Roma. I remember the feeling in the stadium before kickoff. Everyone seemed really low despite the myth that Old Trafford is a church service. The atmosphere is electric on Champions League nights. Not sure if it was because Roma's ultras had attacked United fans in Rome, but people seemed more angry than anything. I remember that one because I was there, and it was pretty naughty on Matt Busby Way. Nicholas Charles says, Newcastle 4, Arsenal 4. We, as in Arsenal, were 4-0 up at half-time and the game was virtually over. However, when the second half started, the RB got sent off for a stupid foul and I was dreading the Arsenal implosion. There you go. Giancarlo Bernini says, the first Liverpool 4, Newcastle 3 game. He also mentions Germany's 7-1 demolition of Brazil. Salamanca 5, Atletico Madrid 4 from the 97-98. Christian Vieri played in La Liga that year and scored all 4 goals for Atletico Madrid and still ended up on the losing team. Harry Simeu says Spurs 4, Arsenal 5. Always enjoyed winning at the Lane. Back then, even when they bagged 4, they still couldn't stop us. Mike said Spurs 3, Man United 5. Rick says obviously the Liverpool 4-3 win, but also Real Madrid 7, Frankfurt 3. Were you actually alive when you saw this? Oh, there he goes. My dad made me and Michael watch this. There you go. So he did watch it. Pascal Gimondi, here's one for you, mate, Phil. Borough 8, City 1. Pascal is a Middlesbrough fan. So Dan DeLuca from Sofa Sports News says West Ham 3, Spurs 4, and it was Stalteri that got the winner in the last minute. And others are some really great ones here. Let me find it. Nodas in Greece, or he's an Australian Greek. He says, the Greek Cup final in 2009, Olympiakos 4, AEK 4. Olympiakos won 15-4 on penalties. AEK Athens were 2-0 up at half time. Olympiakos made it 2-2. Then went 3-2 up. Matt Darvish just scored. It just went back and forth. And the manager for Olympiakos at the time was Ernesto Valverde, who's the Barcelona manager.
That's right.
Hugo in Brazil says Santos 4, Flamengo 5, which is a game billed as Ronaldinho versus Neymar. So yeah, loads of games here. What was your favourite 7-goal thriller? Was it even a 7-goal thriller?
United 4, City 3.
Okay.
Michael Owen.
That's your favourite ever game?
It's just the one that springs in mind as a 7-goal thriller.
Obviously, so, you're saying that because Phil's on, he's going to say the 6-1.
No, nothing to do with Phil. No, it's just that game had everything, really. You know, Bellamy made it 3-3. He did Rio from the halfway line, and then Owen got the win on the last second. Yeah,
because Rio Ferdinand decided to do kick-ups on the halfway line.
Wanted to do a full.
Sorry, Rio. Connor, what's your game?
Mine's probably a relatively recent one, seeing Saints beat Aston Villa 6-1 when Mane scored the 2-minute 56 hat-trick.
Okay.
I'll never forget, my mate who sits next to me missed the first 4 goals. As he was like... So, yeah, that was... moment of history, wasn't it, to be there. So
I was surprised he didn't say the Southampton win against United when Austin Stad scored.
So you think I was
6-3, wasn't it? I think.
I must have been very young then, so that's not in the memory bank for me.
Letitia Chip Schmeichel that day.
Yeah, Albert Chip Schmeichel the week before.
Yep.
Rod.
4-3. I always go back to the Liverpool Newcastle one. That was always stuck out to me. I remember watching it and Stan Collymore getting a late win and Kevin Keegan up, hanging over the billboards. That was the most memorable, to be honest. I didn't realise that was 4-3, that Michael Owen one that Jan said then. But now I don't even remember that one, to be honest. I remember him scoring the winner, but I didn't know it was 4-3. But yeah, it was always Newcastle and Liverpool, the 4-3 one. It's Stan Collymore getting the late winner.
Phil?
Yeah, I think you touched on it earlier. I think the 6-1 win at Old Trafford was a nice one to see. I see Rod's laughing there, but
I'm crying.
You know, it's nice to go to Old Trafford and score 6. So yeah, that's one that sticks in the memory and probably will for a long time. So
when City beat us, they always beat us convincingly, don't they?
Yeah,
beat us convincingly. I can't remember City actually scraping a win. It's always a convincing win. It's a 5-1. It's a 6-1. Yeah. It's a 3-1. I mean, we got the 5-0, but that was pretty much it. And Kanchelskis scored
a hat-trick.
That was pretty much it. We haven't really battered City, have we? My favourite has to be...
4-2.
If you mind.
No.
Yeah, my favourite has to be United 6, Arsenal 2. Because I remember...
Nisha?
No, man. Well, there's the Rumbelows cut. Oh, yeah. But the one where York scored a hat-trick. I mean, I remember being at Stretford End for that one, and it was 5-1 at half time, and the Arsenal fans left. So yeah, but anyway. Speaking of Arsenal, look, they used to be a club that thrilled crowds home and away, but now they simply amuse crowds home and away. Phil, it was another pathetic display by Arsenal. They left their fans fuming, and rightly so. We've heard Rodri's views on Arsenal's players' attitudes and mentality over the past God knows how many years. What's your take on what's now known as the banter era at Arsenal?
I think it starts with the manager. I've always thought this over sort of like certainly the last sort of couple of years, that I think his sort of time has just worn on, and he seems to have not moved with the times, Mr. Wenger, and with him. I think then the club had a big opportunity in the summer to let him go, and probably bottled it a little bit, and probably should have made a decision that was probably difficult at the time, but didn't take the opportunity to replace him. And then the biggest thing really which sticks out, and I think if you look back over the years, is that they've had players like the Henrys, the Fabregases, Cole, Nasri, Van Persie. These players have left the club, and they've never replaced them with some real quality. What I mean by quality is those players have either gone for various reasons. Van Persie was probably approaching the 30s at the time when he left, and they don't seem to have brought anyone through or replaced them with players of the same ilk. That's what's sort of like they're now obviously faced with. It's probably not an accumulation of now, it's probably accumulation over the years of not basically replacing players and basically acting like the Man Uniteds have, the Liverpools have now started to do it, Chelsea, City have started to bring in, so seem to have just stood still. And I put that down to the manager, really. So,
here's another question, Phil, because obviously, you know, you're a Pep Guardiola fan. I completely understand. You know, I'm a big Mourinho fan. He changes his mind more than he changes his pants. But the thing is, let's be 100% honest. Any manager that goes to this current Arsenal at this moment in time, They won't be able to work anything, as far as I'm concerned. They won't be able to make them a top four team. This is my honest opinion, because when you look at that squad, if they change managers in the summer, let's say, for example, Wenger goes and they bring someone else in, like Ancelotti, I believe the next man that comes in will need at least 3 years to build a team that's capable of mounting a top four challenge. Yep. What do you make of this Arsenal team? And can someone like Guardiola, if, hypothetically speaking, he walked into the Arsenal job, would he be able to do anything with them?
I think certainly if we touch on Guardiola, I think the first thing he would try and do is he's put his philosophy into the club. That's not to say what Arsene Wenger's done over the years, nothing but remarkable. But times change, and there's a new area of type of manager out there now. This high press game, which seems to be, your Klopps, Guardiolas are doing it, and a lot of that comes if you look at the Spanish teams, the top Spanish teams, Atletico Madrid, they all, Barcelona, Real Madrid, they all tend to play that way. But going back to your original question, I think, Guardiola, would he go in and change things? I think you're right. I don't think it'd happen overnight. I think it'd probably take the best part of 2 years at least. I'd even go as far as say Mourinho sending someone like that. He'd go in and steady the ship and probably do the dirty work that's needed. And what I mean by that is probably getting rid of the dead wood in the changing room, because there seems to be a lot of it at Arsenal, and that seems to be where the problem is.
Can I add something, if I may?
Yeah, go on.
Who's Arsenal's biggest asset as a player?
At this moment in time,
they
don't really have any, because the three main assets in Wilshere, Ozil and Sanchez are out of contract.
Oh, there you go. Says it all about the club. Disarray. It's abysmal. Mm-hmm. The way that it's run and how... I don't blame Arsenal fans. I mean, we've had a lot of rivalry between United and Arsenal over the years, but I can understand their frustrations. They paid top dollar to go and watch their team. To watch that, it's, for me, it's a joke. The way that it's been handled, it's... It's not right. not right at all.
But listen, I know people, a lot of people are going to disagree with me, but if you don't like it, then don't spend your money. It's that simple, honestly. It is that easy. You don't have to spend hundreds of thousands of pounds travelling up and down the country to watch rubbish. Why would you? Why? It doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. It's not about supporting your club. I'm sorry, don't complain if the results aren't on the pitch. You know, just stop it. Do something about it. If they stop making money, then they're going to do something about it. Anyway, that's just my my theory on things. Yeah. Anyway, Connor, Wenger's men, they're without a win in 5 games. And Wenger even said that the defeat was harsh. Do you blame him? Or was anything harsh about it? I don't know. I didn't see anything wrong with that result.
He's lost the plot, isn't he? He really has. It's almost hypocritical calling it harsh, because they were outdone, hands down, on the pitch. He had nothing to complain about. No decisions went against them, really, in this game. Admittedly, the West Brom one before probably could have complained about the penalty. But the reverse fixture, I believe, West Brom got denied a clear penalty as well. So him using the word harsh is just ridiculous in my eyes. He's out of touch with not only, as you spoke about earlier, the players and the game, but just the way the game's officiated now. He needs to go, doesn't he? He needs to go to save himself, to save the club, to save everything that he's built, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's run out of excuses.
He's running on empty, isn't he? He's running on empty. Yeah. Well, look, Bournemouth were always in the game,
mm-hmm.
even when they were losing.
Yeah.
And they just capitalised on Arsenal's poor defending, because that's what Arsenal do. You know, they went from a three-man central defensive trio to a back four when Ramsey came on, and then they conceded another goal. Mm-hmm. What will the win do for Bournemouth's confidence, though?
Oh, it's a massive confidence boost. I mean, when you look at clubs like Bournemouth, they don't expect to get results like these against the top.
They almost beat them last season.
They did, but you know, you don't expect it. You know, it's you know, they judge themselves and the teams around them or the bottom 10 and try and get the results through there. So beating the top boys as well, and going to go down as well, to come back and beat them in the way that they did. Bournemouth try and play football the right way, which I like.
Oh, here we go.
You know.
Here we go.
No, in
the
a
right
sense
way.
Of, yeah, but they've been brave ever since they've come up. They've never come and you know, stuck 11 men behind the ball and try to get results. So try and play Eddie Howe's philosophy, and I respect that. The fact that they've been brave, and you know, fortune favours the brave, as they say. So I think Bournemouth have done all right to be in the Premiership and do what they've been doing. And you know, this can kickstart their season. And if they get on the run and get a few wins, they can climb. Well, if, but you know. Winning games like this can only build your confidence, can't it?
Such a romantic. Rod, Alexis Sanchez was left out of the Arsenal game, and it fueled speculation that he could either join United or City. Now, last night, City apparently pulled out of any deal or any interest they got in Sanchez. So it looks like he could be on his way to United. What do you make of all this, mate? Because as far as I know, he was on the verge of joining City in the last transfer window. Then, according to Red Issue, United spoke to Sanchez's people in September. So what's happening? I don't understand.
Well, it's obviously that they've obviously had a handshake or verbal agreement that Sanchez is going to join them and for this fee, and he's obviously reneged on that deal, and because obviously someone's offered him a bit more money. Obviously United have come into the fray, and his head's been turned by a bit of money. And it all depends on Mkhitaryan now, by the sounds of it. So if they can sort of deal with Mkhitaryan, it looks like it'll be a straight swap. So, wait and see. So it looks like it's going to run on and on. It's one of them sagas. Or is it going to get dealt with? So we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, the curry mile is in Manchester. If he's worried about missing it, if he goes to Green Lanes, it's full of Turkish kebab shops. He will love it. I promise.
They're waiting for Stel to drive him to the Emirates, Rod.
I'm sure he would, but you know, he looks like he eats a few kebabs with that stomach he's got. So yeah, he needs to stay away from
you
that.
You see what I mean? So I've got my chauffeur's cap ready and everything. You know, I'll open the back door and everything. Like, come on, like, you know, Lady Penelope and all.
No, but I think Mkhitaryan, if everything's going well, he'd be a good player to have in your team. But I don't think he's the type of mentality that the player that they want at Arsenal. They've got loads of them weak-minded. They need leaders there, and Mkhitaryan seems to be one of them.
There it is. There it is. You know, I completely agree with you. I think if he goes there, they'll get 6 to 8 good months out of him, and then they'll see exactly what I've been saying about him. Just lazy, sullen, just got no interest. You know, he's perfect for him. He's a perfect Arsenal player. Please. And I know Harry, you know, he might be listening to it now, and I heard this podcast last night. It's like, we don't want United's cast-offs. Take him. Take him, please. I will pay you to take him. How about that? Anyway, Phil, what's your stance on City's take on Alexis Sanchez? Obviously, it seems that he wants to play for Pep. Guardiola wants him, but at the same time, City won't meet his wage demands. Do you think City are doing the right thing in putting their foot down and saying, no, enough's enough, you know, we're not going to make you our highest earner?
Yeah, I think they're right. I think, you know, Rod touched on it earlier. They've done a deal with Arsenal in the summer, which obviously hinged on Arsenal couldn't get that deal over the line, and which ended up in ultimately with Sanchez staying with Arsenal. I think City, reading between the lines and what's being reported, City felt they had the deal in principle in place. And Rod touched on it. I think what's happened is United have obviously jumped in, which I can't blame them for, because he's a world-class player. And basically, they've seized an opportunity, really. I mean, City are right in, you know, they seem to have taken the sort of moral high ground on it, that we've shook on a deal, we've agreed something in principle, and it looks like Sanchez and his advisors have sort of, like, you know, they want to take as much money as they can get in, which at this time in the game now, it's the modern day footballer, aren't they? They're earning as much money as they can. So I can't really blame him, if I'm honest. He probably does want to play for Pep, but I think at this moment in time, it's probably not a bad call going to Old Trafford, because, you know, it's not a bad place to play your football, is it, really?
Mm. Well, I've got another. It's a two-part question for you, Phil. First of all, if the rumours are true, which I'm not really going to go into too much, but if the rumours are true that he was going to be made City's highest-paid player, do you think it would have unsettled the likes of De Bruyne and maybe Sterling, who've had a fantastic season? Would that have made them a little bit unhappy?
Yeah, most definitely. I think, you know, I think most of them have these clauses now in contracts that should somebody come in and earn more money, they want to be on a level par with the highest earner of the club. So, would it unsettle things? Probably, you know, probably not. I think you probably have a few. You probably have had a few players. He sort of like promise to bring them back in line with what Sanchez was going to be earning. But, you know, I don't think it just solely drops down to money. I think there'll be a little bit more to it than that's not being reported. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, that'll never come out. But I think is that, you know, would it have caused unrest? I don't think it would have, no. I think, you know, I think City have got enough money to bring people into line if they need to. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I think anyway. So
great stuff. And the second part of my question, if Sanchez did join Man City, would that have spelt the end for Sergio Aguero? Because as silly as this sounds, it doesn't seem that Aguero is the type of player that Guardiola likes. It's almost as if he's not versatile enough. Do you think he'd have played that central striker's role?
Yeah, I think I fought this for the last 12 months. I think Sergio Aguero's days are numbered, really, at the club. I know he's been fantastic, and he's a great centre forward. But I just don't think he fits the model of a centre forward that Guardiola wants, and for that, I think Sanchez was the player he was looking to bring in to replace him, because he seems to think highly of Jesus. I know he's out injured at this moment in time, but I think sort of my opinion is Aguero's days seem to be numbered at the club. I won't be surprised when, you know, it's announced that they're selling him or he's leaving the club. Yeah. It won't come as a surprise anyway.
Well, look, to be honest, I think he's one of the top five strikers in Premier League history. That's my honest opinion. I think he's that good. Yeah. I honestly think he's that good. Right, you, Sanchez's potential new employers, Man United, beat Stoke 3-0. Mm-hmm. They had a few chances, Stoke, to be fair. Steven Ireland twice, maybe he was looking for his wig when he was shooting those times, and then there was that Shaqiri shot. But that's pretty much it, really, in terms of shaky moments. Valencia scored the cracker with his left foot. Martial scored another goal with his right. He never uses his left. But it was a stroll after that, wasn't it?
It was comfortable. Second half especially, I thought United played really well second half. They controlled their game, they bossed it. First half got the early goal. I thought United would have kicked off after that, but they didn't. You've got to give Stoke a little bit of credit after the goal, you know, especially going a goal down early at Old Trafford with their run recently. They came back into the game, and like you said, they had a few chances. Phil Jones put a brilliant block on the goal line through Chipper Motting, which was an open goal. Goals 1-1, you never know, it could be a different game. But once United got the second before half time, second half was a stroll. I fear for Stoke, I really do. I don't think the squad is good enough to stay up. I looked at them last night. Defensively, once upon a time, they were sound. They're not sure.
Shawcross was injured, let's be fair.
Yeah, but, you know, even if he's there, look where they are in the league, even when he has played, to be fair.
Well, you could blame Leslie for that, can't you?
I look at Shaqiri. He's the only kind of bright spark at Stoke. I don't see anything else in there. I really don't. And if Lambert doesn't add a few players in this transfer window, I think they can go down. I really do.
Mm. And we were only saying a few weeks ago that Hughes might have enough to keep them up. What do I know, hey?
I'm not saying I'm right.
Gents, Stoke announced Paul Lambert as their new manager yesterday morning. And we've said for the past few weeks that their squad is good enough to stay up. But is Lambert the right man? What do you reckon, Connor?
I think I'm with you guys. I think they'll go down. It'll give them more of a fight because obviously you get the... Well, most managers give a bounce, don't they, when they come in. Pardew aside, apparently. But yeah, I don't think they have the squad. And even, like you say, Shaqiri's their bright spark, but he's a fair-weather player, isn't he? When stuff's going well, he plays well. When it's backs against the walls, he's nowhere to be seen, is he? I think it was a couple of weeks ago he just gave up chasing balls in the end. And you, when you're down there, you need every player to fight their heart out. I just don't think they've got the players that will do that for them. So he's got a big job on his hands.
Phil, City walloped Stoke. Chelsea walloped Stoke. United got a good result against Stoke. I think Liverpool will probably wallop them at Anfield. Tottenham walloped them. I guess Stoke are not the whipping boys, they're the walloping boys. Have they got any chance at all with Paul Lambert?
I think it's going to be difficult. It's probably a difficult job for Paul Lambert to go into. I think if you look at his sort of like past two jobs, he's been at them clubs for, I think it was Wolves, wasn't it, and Blackburn. I think he spent less than 12 months at both clubs. I think it's going to be very difficult for him. You know, I think Jan touched on earlier, I watched the game, and they were poor. And you know, he's got a lot of work on his hands in a short space of time. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see them dropping come the end of the season.
And Rod, Mark Hughes, to be fair, did a good job kind of changing Stoke's, I don't know, philosophy in terms of, it was nothing like Tony Pulis, but it wasn't the Mark Hughes Stoke that we kind of expected to see. At Blackburn, under Mark Hughes, they're very aggressive. At Fulham, they're quite aggressive, but it's almost as if he tried to get Stoke to play pretty football with players like Bojan and Afellay and all these other players, Arnautovic. Where do you think it's going wrong for Stoke? And again, to you, will Lambert keep them up?
The first question, they look like an ageing team to me. In the midfield, you've got Fletcher and Allen, who are not the mobilest midfielders in the world. Peter Crouch up front, who's probably Phil's quicker than him, and he's 20 stone. So, and so yeah, they're gonna struggle. You need energy in that middle of the park, and obviously Stoke haven't got that in a minute. Yeah, they've got abundance of experience, but you need legs, and you know they're getting overrun. I know they were unlucky, and they ended up getting beat 3-0 at Old Trafford, but you know they're leaking goals left, right, and centre, and that's not likely like Stoke of old. And you know, Mark Hughes is obviously gone now, and Paul Lambert, will he keep him up? Like Phil says, it's going to be difficult for him because the squad's depleted, there's a lot of injuries, and they need to get back to winning ways and just keeping some clean sheets. Like we touched on over Christmas, they've only had 3 clean sheets, and 2 of them were in the first 2 weeks of the season. So they need to sort that out before they start, you know, winning some games. But, you know, he's got a tough task on his hand.
That's right. You want to add anything?
No.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at me like you want to say something.
No.
Okay, fine.
I agree with the guys.
Well done. You're being diplomatic. Connor, West Brom's win against Brighton has made things a little bit tighter at the bottom, and your boy Southampton are now in a proper dogfight. Things are going from bad to worse, aren't they, mate? I shouldn't laugh. I'm sorry. It's just...
It is laughable. Don't worry. It is laughable. It's an absolute joke at the moment, to be honest. I mean, if you just have a little look at the old timeline for something on Twitter, it's just negativity, negativity, negativity. And it's match days at the stadium, after the games, before the games. I mean, there's kind of 8 or 9 teams that, in my opinion, deserve to go down this season. So we're not the only ones. But we need a change and we need it fast. Unlucky at the weekend. I say unlucky, cheated at the weekend. But that's another topic, isn't it? VAR. But yeah, I think changing the manager probably isn't the right thing to do at the time, but he doesn't look capable enough for me.
Is that because of his lack of experience in the Premier League as a manager, or is it because of the fact that he's just not good enough?
I think he's just not good enough. I mean, he has no plan B. His plan A is questionable. And it goes above the manager as well, to be fair. It goes to the board too, because we're linked with... Well, every player we're linked with, we get beaten too by clubs you'd expect to be challenging. Like Walcott, we've just lost out to Everton too. That I can kind of understand when it comes to wages and stuff, but there comes a point when you've just got to wipe the chequebook out, haven't you? Because we can't afford to go down. No one can afford to go down.
Connor, why is he not playing Gabbiadini? Why does he keep going with one when he's only scored like one goal in like 40 games?
We don't know.
Right.
We don't really play to suit Gabbiadini. I think the kind of striker he is, he's very easy to work out because he's not particularly quick, strong, good in the air. So if you can man mark him at the game very easily, I think that's his problem. And he needs kind of good service. And with players like Redmond and Tadic, you're just not getting that this season at all.
But surely with a striker who's only scored one goal in like 40 games, you would have thought it would give Gabbiadini more chance. I mean, it can't get any worse than Long, can he? You know?
I think it's the work rate Long brings that gets him the game time because he's relieves the pressure, doesn't he? And we are under a lot of pressure a lot of the time.
Well, you could always blame Guardiola for that team talk he gave Redmond at the end of the game.
Yeah, that was strange. Mate. I think if he thinks he's that good, he can buy him off us. 40 million, have him.
Blimey. Well, sorry to hear that, man. It's never nice to have a guest on the show that supports a club that is in the relegation dogfight, unless it's an Arsenal fan, but then it's down there, unfortunately. So.
Maybe next year.
Or Real Madrid.
Or Real Madrid. We'll go into them in just a minute. Right, in other news, French referee Tony Chaperon has been suspended by the French FA for kicking Nantes player Diego Carlos before issuing him with a second yellow card for accidentally knocking him over. This is brilliant. Chaperon has since admitted he wasn't bundled over deliberately by Costa and has asked for the second yellow card to be rescinded, which it has. Now, Connor, this seems like a case of sorry, not sorry, isn't it? What's your take on the incident?
I've probably watched the video kind of 50 times. It is hilarious. I don't understand what's going through his head. I do not understand. It's quite clearly an accident. In fact, the ref cut him up. And to have the audacity to give a yellow card in the first place, but after you've just booted him. I mean, fair play to Diego Carlos, isn't it? Fair play to him for not reacting worse than he did. He just kind of laughed it off the pitch, didn't he? But no, I think he won't have a job much longer, will he? Let's be honest.
I think the funny thing about this is that the referee said that he had a leg injury before, and when he got tumbled over, it's almost as if the red mist descended because he's got this kind of like the fear that the injury is going to come back again, so he just kicked out at him. That's bonkers. But, you know, we've seen footballers push referees and all that, like, you know, Di Canio and... Was it Paul Walcott, wasn't it? Where he kind of like ran backwards and fell on his arse. And yeah. So Nantes, they were in the middle of a match between Paris Saint-Germain at the time and they lost 1-0. Now, Angel Di Maria finally got the score sheet and he got the winner. Di Maria's old club, Real Madrid, surrendered the title at the weekend after a 1-0 loss at home against Villarreal. Right, so Champions League or no Champions League, is Zidane going to be in a job next season?
I think so.
Yeah.
Who's out there? Who can they replace him with?
Well, they've made strange signings in the past.
Mm.
Wanderlei Luxemburgo.
Oh dear, Benitez.
Rafael Benitez.
I just think
John Toshak.
I just think he might be given the time to spend this year. I don't know. I just don't see anybody out there that can take the job at this precise moment. I don't know what's happened at Real Madrid. I really don't. I mean,
Bernd Schuster.
Bernd Schuster, you're still going on with the managers, right? Ronaldo and Benzema have been the cause for me this season. I mean, they've not scored the goals, and Bale's been injured as well. And it seems to be like a disarray at Real Madrid this year. I can't point a finger at what's gone wrong, to be honest. I mean, it's the same team virtually as last year. Is it an ageing team? I'm not sure. Maybe the likes of Isco and Asensio might need to start playing a lot more regular now and get the best out of the kind of younger players and move the older ones on. But I just think for what he's done in the last few years, he might just scrape the job for another
year. That's the doggy life, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're playing Super Mario, you've got one life left.
Yeah, I think that, so. Those Champions I mean, League. I could be, you know, better as me, as, you know, you can win the Champions League and still get sacked with what happened with Del Bosque. So it won't be a surprise if it goes. I just think this time they might just keep him.
But it goes back to what we said weeks ago, in the sense that they've won so much over a short period of time. There could be a chance that a lot of these players are...
The hunger's gone?
Yeah, possibly.
But that's what I mean about maybe moving the likes of Ronaldo on, Benzema on.
Right, but if that's the case, which is understandable because Ronaldo's like 31, yeah. 32, who do you bring in?
Hazard.
And you really think he can guide Real Madrid to a Champions League? He can guide them to La Liga the way that Barcelona are going at the moment? With the players that they got?
Maybe not next season, but they could build to... getting Real Madrid to where they want to be. So
you'd build your Real Madrid team again, around Eden Hazard.
Well, why not? It'll be Hazard. It could be Aubameyang if they want to start sign another striker.
29-year-old Aubameyang.
Yeah, but well, they need fresh.
A pace merchant.
They need fresh players.
He's another player that should play for Arsenal. Another one whose head isn't screwed.
Lewandowski. They can go and get him if they wanted to. I mean, that's what I mean about moving the likes of Benzema, Ronaldo, possibly Bale, and getting fresh players in with Aguero. New ideas. Well. He's 29, 30 now.
Wouldn't you take him over Aubameyang or Lewandowski?
Yeah, 100%.
What about you, Phil? Would Aguero do well at Real Madrid?
Yes, I think he would. Whether he'd go there, because I know he's got his attachments with Atletico in the past.
Yeah,
there seems to be a big divide across the city. But yeah, I think he'd do well. I think, like you touched on earlier, he's certainly one of the top five in Europe, isn't he? So he's only. I think he'd improve their team now if he was to go. So, yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Right. We end the show with news that Brian Riggs has been appointed head coach of Wales. He was chosen over the likes of Tony Pulis, Mark Hughes, Craig Bellamy, John Toshak, Barry Horn, Paul Bodin, Neville Southall. Who else? Loads of ex-Welsh players, but they've chosen him. Gents, let's be brutally honest. Wales caught lightning in a bottle when they got Gary Speed, and Chris Coleman kind of continued the luck of the Welsh, so to speak. What has this appointment done for you guys in the sense of, has it come as a surprise, and how well do you think it will do? What do you think? The guy that advertised Corn, you know what I'm talking about.
I think it's a surprise.
Yeah.
The fact that he's got no manager experience in the past.
Well, you've got four games?
That's not managerial experience. That's caretaker job. To come in at international level as well, I think it's a massive gamble by Wales. I know you know he's Welsh and whatever else, and he'll bring his ideas and, you know, the passion and whatever else, which I can understand. But stepping into international football with lack of managerial experience, I think is a gamble.
Mm. Rod, we spoke about this a few weeks ago in the sense that, you know, you wanted a guy with that experience. We mentioned Tony Pulis, who obviously has had that experience at managerial level, the top flight. What do you make of this appointment, mate?
Well, it's the experience thing. I don't see where he hasn't got the experience, but, you know, you've got to get the experience somewhere. We've seen it before. Gary Speed didn't have any experience, and he started off what Chris Coleman finished, and he did a really good job. So, you know, he's got the experience, and he's been under the manager Sir Alex Ferguson for how many years? 25 years. So even if he takes half of what he had, then he's going to have something. If he hasn't, then he's an idiot. But I'm sure he's not an idiot. So I'm sure he's going to have something along them lines. So it's, you know, it's it's a big job, and it is a really, really big risk. So it's a difficult one, but you know, he's got it now. There's a lot of people in Wales that are happy that he's got a job. There's a lot of people in Wales that he's not got, that he's happy he has got the job. So you know, he's got the job now, so we have to get behind him, and hopefully, you know, he has a good start. Because if he doesn't get a good start, the fans are going to be onto him, and it, you know, they can turn pretty quickly. So you know, he could have a bad game, and then he's got to wait 3 months, and you know, will he be able to adapt to that kind of stress and that kind of hostility if he does have a bad few games, and then he's got to wait a long time? So it's all something that's up in the air at the minute, and something that we'll just have to wait and see.
Rod, I've got a question for you, if I may. Do you feel the fact that he's missed a lot of games when he used to play for Wales can have a factor in his managerial experience now, in a sense of a few bad results, and you know, the Welsh fans can remember the fact that he missed a lot of games and get on his back quickly? Or do you think they'll be kind of faithful and stick by him?
Well, he's got a 4-year contract, so it'd be ridiculous to get on his back. You know, that's not going to help anyone. The main thing is he's got a, you know, how is his coaching going to come across to the players? Will he have the respect of the players on the playing side? Yes. But, you know, who knows how good of a coach he is or how good of a manager he is? That's just all up in the air in a minute, and we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, he has to have that management and that knack of talking to players and getting the best out of them, and wanting them to run through brick walls for him. That's what he's got to do, and that's what Chris Coleman does. You know, if you get a good group of players who are all going in the same direction, then you know, it can only go up. But you know, he has to have a good start, because you know, like I say, there's a few people that are not happy that he's got the job. But you know, he's got the job now, so we have to get behind him.
Mm-hmm. Phil, who do you think...
talking about them injuries as well? You know, it's, people forget that he did have bad hamstrings. You know, sometimes was it pressure of Sir Alex Ferguson? Possibly, but at the end of the day, it was his decision not to play. So he did have some injuries, and then you've got the managers that have been in charge of Wales before, like Bobby Gould, putting the players like Vinnie Jones captain. I'm sure that wouldn't have gone well in the dressing room. So, you know, like I say, he's got to have a good start, because you know he's up against it.
Mm-hmm. Phil, who do you think he's going to bring in the part of his backroom staff? Because there's been a mention of Paul Scholes, another guy that has he even got his coaching badges? I don't know. Do you think he'll bring in someone like Scholes, or someone experienced, or maybe even someone Welsh like Craig Bellamy, who apparently they interviewed for the job?
I think he'd be foolish if he didn't sort of link into his sort of like United links and people he's played with.
Oh, hello.
At this moment in time, I don't know what kind of relationship he had with Craig Bellamy. Obviously, they played for Wales together, but you know, I don't know what type of relationship he had with Mr. Bellamy. But if I was to stab a guess, I think he'd. They always talk about when management, you surround yourself with people who you trust and you know. Magic. People closer to home, people he's played with, whether they might have a Welsh connection, you know, who knows? You know, he played with Mark Hughes for a long period, and Mark Hughes has got people around him who've been involved in the Welsh scene for numerous years. So he may well be tapping into that sort of avenue. I don't mean bringing Mark Hughes in, because I don't think that would happen, but he may well tap into that side of, you know, players he's played with in the past, you know. You know, Dean Saunders, those type of people who've got a bit of experience and could probably give him a bit of advice of how you actually do things and as an international football manager.
Mm. And Connor, is it a win-win situation for him?
Definitely, because that's quite a coup for him, isn't it, getting that job? Because I think it was quite obvious he wasn't going to take anything lower down in the leagues. So I think, as Rod touched on, it's definitely split the fans, but it's probably a good job for him. It probably is a good base start where expectation isn't high. You know, he's got two qualifying campaigns to get through, and no disrespect to Wales, but you probably don't expect them to qualify. So if he gives it a good go, then happy days for him, isn't it?
Mm. Well, no, he was quoted as saying something along the lines of, I do feel I'll be more suited to coaching at the top than coaching at the bottom. Now, I don't know whether that's because he's confident in himself. I don't know whether he feels that he saw Gary Neville do so badly at Valencia and thought that he could do better.
Mm.
For me, I've seen the likes of Frankie Rijkaard walk into the Dutch national team job. I've seen Van Basten do it. I've seen Gianfranco Zola walk into a job with very little experience. I agree with you in the sense that this is a win-win situation for him, because if he doesn't do well, then people will be like, well, you know, we didn't expect him to. So he'll be like, well, you didn't expect me to, so what do you expect? There you go. I use the word expect too much. You know? Whereas at the same time, if he does do well, it's like, ha, I told you so. For the sake of the Welsh national team, I know they've got a lot of young players coming through. Perhaps his experience working with youngsters at United could be something. I know that he doesn't like defensive coaching because he walked out of a training session a couple of times at United when David Moyes was doing two-hour training sessions. So I guess he's going to be more focused on attacking. But it'll be very interesting to see, because the way I see it, they're going to China for a few friendly games, and are they playing? I think they might be playing the German national team as well in one of the friendlies. So, which is quite ironic, because I think he made his debut against the Germans as a player for the Welsh national team. So it could go either way for him. But for the sake of the national team, for the sake of Wales, because we know that they had a successful 2014 Euros, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, almost 4 years ago. Wow, can't be.
2016.
No, 2016.
See, confusing me.
Anyway,
my fault again.
Yeah, of course. It's a beard that's putting me off. So yeah, let's see how it goes with him. But if he does get the chop, then I think they're going to go for a more experienced head. But who's out there? I don't know. Maybe
he needs luck as well. You know, you need players. You need Gareth Bale fit. You need Ramsey fit. You need all the top players fit. You know, if he doesn't get that, then he's going to be struggling. But I don't agree with Connor that if he doesn't qualify, then Wales should be qualifying for the Euro Championship. Just been in the semi-final, the Euros. All right, we're not qualifying for the World Cup, but we should be playing in that Euros, and we should be qualifying for that Euros with the squad that he's got and the players that he's got.
There's a lot of reliance on Bale there, though, isn't there? And it's because I think without Bale, Wales are a very weakened team, because he is that good. And his injuries have just been awful, haven't they? And then it doesn't look like they're going to get any better.
Yeah, like I said, he needs luck. He needs all the players to be fit. And if he doesn't get that, it's going to be tough for him as well.
Mm.
But, you know, he's going to have to adapt to that. He knows that going into the game. You know, it's something he's just going to have to adapt to and get on the training pitch and just adapt to it.
Yeah. I don't think he'll be naive as to just bringing people that haven't got any experience in the sense of a coaching capacity. I think you might see the likes of Mike Phelan.
What about Tosha?
What's been doing now as well?
Phil touched upon, when you're coaching and when you're doing a big job like that, you need people that you can trust. So he's going to bring people in that he trusts 100%. I don't know about Craig Bellamy. I don't think that'll be an option for him. So I don't know. Maybe it's
Nicky Butt.
Maybe maybe wrong. Maybe go for Craig Bellamy, but I'd be surprised if he did.
Well, Nicky Butt's got a job at the academy, man. He ain't going to leave that for the Welsh national team. But what affiliation has he got with Wales? Just because he makes with Ryan Giggs?
Yeah, could be.
If anything, he'll be Paul Scholes, because they're mates, aren't they? And Scholes is too busy complaining about Pogba on BT. But no, I could see someone like Mike Phelan, maybe some of the old backroom stuff at United, maybe someone that Ferguson might know. You just never know, because when you're an ex player like him that's probably known so many different people, he might call up, or maybe Peter Schmeichel might be goalkeeping coach. You never know. Wayne Hennessy might need to learn how to catch
a ball. Mullenstein, maybe.
Mullenstein, yeah, but he's in India, isn't he? Wes Brown. You just never know. So let's see. It'll be an interesting next few months to see how Wales get on. And yeah. Anyway. That's it for us this week, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thank you to Connor. Before I let you go, mate, do you want to give us give your show a mention? Tell us more about it.
Oh, yeah. So it's Post Post Footy on Twitter and Post Post Football on Facebook. It's a podcast primarily, but we've got a website going as well. And we've currently got a little competition going on as well. So
what's that about?
Check that out. For FIFA, for the old FIFA game.
FIFA points.
Yes.
You want to give us those? You get those ultimate team legend cards, innit, with your rude hoodie. Excellent. Phil, you're on Twitter, mate.
I am indeed, yes.
You use it that often?
No, I'm not. I'm not a big social media. Not as much as probably Mr. Giggs does and Connor do. So I'm I'm probably a little bit more reserved. Just try and get the fish up now and then, get a bit of winding up going on.
Or him, Phil.
What do you mean me?
He got banned last week.
It was well worth getting the ban for what I did. Okay?
He abused Mkhitaryan.
How can you be on Twitter and eat at the same time? You can't do that, can you?
I don't even know how. Who actually reported me? But if he reported me, then come on. Right, Rod.
Pardon? Rod James Giggs.
And yours?
Yannickis J.
You use it more than Phil.
Probably do, yeah.
I bet Phil's got more followers than you as well.
Phil's a nice guy.
Can I ask you a question as well? Has he dyed his beard tonight? That was great.
Just for men, mate. I told you, just for men.
It's going this weekend.
Okay.
I'll be fresh next week.
Why have you sold out a big issue now? Just sold them out.
I've got any more.
I'm going to let him use my shaver and my sink upstairs. Don't worry about it. He can
very trimmed tonight. I don't
have any hair, so I'm just making the most of what I've got left. Relax. You people like you give me stress. Right, guys, that's it for us this week. You can give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. We're obviously on YouTube, so smash that subscribe and like button, leave a comment, and that's it for this week. Till next time, take care.